Owen. What did you do?
Charles, the world is not the same as it was. Mutants. They're gone now.
I hurt myself today to see if I still feel. I focus on the pain, the only thing that's real.
Where is she?
Beneath the stains.
She's like you.
Of time.
Very much like you.
The feelings disappear.
She needs our help.
You are
someone to come along.
Someone has come along.
I am still right here. And you could have it all. My empire of dirt. I will let you down. I will make you hurt. I will keep myself. I would find away.
Logan, you still have time.
Well, we just warmed up for 10 minutes. You want to get this party started?
Mm,
what are we talking about? Logan?
Yeah, some movie. I don't give a shit.
We're supposed to be talking about Maltese Falcon, but somebody's watched 30 plus movies this year and hasn't watched it.
I watched.
You've had 3 months.
Yeah, I don't feel like it.
I know. We just have to pick something else.
That's what we should have done.
Maltese Falcon. You should have told me that this was like Airplane or Wrath of Khan, that you're never going to watch it.
I will end up watching it because, you know, it's Bogart. Because it's Bogart. Yeah. You couldn't tell. You couldn't tell since you're listening, but I shrugged when I said it.
You know,
it's Bogart.
Turner Classic Movies is now starting a regular Sunday morning feature called Noir Alley.
I saw
with Noir Czar Eddie Miller, mm-hmm. Who is the president of the Film Foundation or Film Noir Foundation, which preserves film noir movies and shows them both on film and digitally around the country, and their first episode ran this past Sunday, and it was The Maltese Falcon. So, and I thought of you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I didn't watch it, because I'd watched it.
That's sweet.
I had watched it, I guess, in December, when we originally discussed doing Maltese Falcon. And then
then life happened.
Yeah, and then when we thought we were going to record, like, 3 weeks ago, I guess it was. Like, I rewatched it again like 4 weeks ago. So
what do you need me here for?
Look, I'm a supporting actor. I can't hold. I'm not a starring vehicle.
Yeah, you're no Tom Hanks.
I'm more like David Schwimmer.
Or Sam Rockwell.
Or Hank Azaria.
More like a Sam Rockwell.
No, Sam Rockwell should have been a star. Damn it.
That wasn't his fortune in this life.
No, it wasn't. Well, that's smaller movies.
Not yet, anyway.
Did you see Mr. Right with him and Anna Kendrick?
No, not yet.
I've heard it's pretty darn good.
I think it just popped up on Prime, so I might check it out.
He dances, I'm sure. We love our Sam Rockwell.
I don't remember. What's the name of that song that he dances to in Iron Man 2 and it's in, like, Superman 2? No, is it Superman 2.
Oh, I don't know the name of it, but it's the one that's like dan na na dan na na dan na na
na na na na na. Yeah, it's like in Superman 2, it's the song that plays on the jukebox when he gets revenge of those guys at the end of the diner.
It's in Swingers too, I think.
I've never seen Swingers.
Ugh, really?
Ugh. I want to talk about the movies.
Sorry, I had a guttural reaction there.
I want to talk to you about all the movies I rewatched instead of Maltese Falcon. These last few weeks.
All right. I think we should do this, like, tight. Like, we should forget about all the 13 minutes that have passed already, and we should just start and do a 20-minute Logan discussion and just, bam, post 20 minutes.
I don't give a shit. Let's do it.
Like, bam. So forget about everything. Let's start this off right. Welcome to Celluloid Jelly.
Hey, everybody. How are you?
I'm fine, Cesar. I'm CJ Talbot, and with me, as always, is Cesar Alejandro Jr. from Filmsmash.com.
Well, he says always, but it's been a troubling task getting us together.
It really has. But, I mean, you've still been on every episode, though.
Yeah.
Don't think that I haven't thought about bringing a second co-host on for the times
every
when you can't make
so
it.
Every episode so far.
But we both recently just saw Logan, like many of you, and we figured we would, have a little discussion about that. So this
is going to have spoilers, I'm sure.
Of course. We always spoil the shit out of everything.
Yeah, let's just do
this
it.
Plus, whatever.
Tons of people have watched it already.
Yeah. Yeah, they all know the space aliens come down at the end and take him for testing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Logan was, he was already dead.
We find out that Canada was originally populated by the Prometheus engineers.
So. Yeah, the Prime Minister was originally a young 7-year-old boy with supernatural powers.
Yeah, and the Prime Minister of Micronesia was saved by Derek Zoolander.
Yeah. Okay, let's keep it tight.
Yeah, keep it tight. Logan is the new movie directed by James Mangold. It is the 8th film starring Hugh Jackman as Wolverine, or 8th movie to feature
him.
Since he's not really a major force in First Class, but he is in all the other ones. And it has a older, grizzled Logan, and it takes place in what? Is it 2029?
2026.
2026, thank you. And mutants have been disappearing, dying off. There is an unknown cause. And Logan has sort of settled into the mindset that he is, going to live out the rest of his existence and eventually die off like the rest of the mutants. He's been caring for Charles Xavier, who is 90 plus years old and doesn't have full control over his mental faculties in the both natural and supernatural way,
in the superpowered sense.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Should I continue with it?
Yeah, I thought you were... I was handing the baton off there.
Oh, okay. You should have made a visual cue for me. Okay, well, from that point, they encounter and come across a young girl who seems to have quite a bit in common with Logan, played by Daphne Keene. Is that her name?
Yes.
Daphne something.
Yep, Daphne Keene.
I guess we can talk about this a little bit later, but she kind of looks like, a 10-year-old Luke Haas, I think.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But not when Luke Haas was 10, when Luke Haas was like 18.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
if that makes sense to anybody.
So basically, he discovers that she's being pursued by some people with lab coats and nefarious, designs on the young girl.
Yeah, an ex-military cyber-enhanced
racist
guy. Played by Boyd Holbrook. His character's name is Pierce. And then Dr. Rice is Richard E. Grant.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we didn't mention it, but the little girl, her name in the movie is Lara.
Yes.
And there's another mutant that hangs around with Xavier and Logan, and his name is Caliban, and he's played by Stephen Merchant.
Yes, I did not recognize him until the credits at the end. So,
well, I recognized him immediately, but you more closely associate Stephen Merchant with comedic roles, much more comedic roles. And although there are a few moments in the patter between Logan and Caliban that are comedic, this is mostly a dramatic role for him, and he's under heavy makeup, and so he's a little bit tougher to recognize. I think a lot of people will probably...
He's still as pale as ever, though.
Yeah, I think a lot of people realize that they know him from somewhere, but may not recognize it as Stephen Merchant.
Sure.
So, but hey, this is a much drastically different movie than the rest of the X-Men franchise in that it sort of separates itself from the typical superhero tropes and becomes more of a contemporary neo-Western. It's very sort of dusty. It takes place in, I guess originally they start in Texas, right?
Well, he's on the border. He's on in El Paso.
Okay.
That's where the opening scene starts, I think.
You know, like in old Westerns, like, you know, Red River, for example, you know, like they would drive cattle like from Montana down to Texas and back. And like that sort of north to south swing is where this movie takes place, essentially. Like, they kind of, like, drive back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in that sense, it is sort of set up like a Western. And it doesn't necessarily feel like a Western, but if you could take the superpower mutant thing away and take all the modern things away and replace cars with horses and things like that, you would certainly get, you know, get that sense.
There are horses in the film, too, though.
Yes, yeah, there are. That's true. There's a farm.
Yeah, played by a guy who I did not expect.
Eric LaSalle.
I know.
Eric?
Yeah, which was odd seeing him with
no soul glow whatsoever. With
closely shaved hair compared to his most iconic role.
In Coming to America, yeah. Many of you will know him from his stint on ER, but... you know, everyone knows that his best role is Coming to America.
Yeah, it's my favorite comedy ever.
Like, I love that scene where Mr. McDowell, like, slides the milkshake over from the customer to him when he walks in.
Louis Anderson goes and puts it down on the tray.
So good.
I like when they're at the basketball game and he's talking to Eddie Murphy's Akeem and he's like, wearing clothes must be a new experience for you. He's the perfect asshole.
Yeah. But not in this movie. So in this movie he is...
Well, okay, we'll talk about it when we get to that part. So I have some... Actually, you have some... Well, we'll get to it.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah. So, you know, anyway, but, you know, like, this is... the reason I bring that up is not just to give you a better description of the movie, because obviously most of you who are listening to this have seen it. You know, I think this is a movie that, you know... If someone were to ask me if they needed to see the other X-Men movies to appreciate this one, I would probably say no.
I'd agree with you.
And I would even go so far as to say that this movie has crossover appeal to non-comic book fans who would like a movie, for example, like Hell or High Water that came out last year. Maybe even a No Country for Old Men or something like that. So I think, you know, this is the kind of comic book movie that that you could take, you know, grandpa to, you know.
If you have a cool grandfather.
Yeah, even if he only likes, you know, John Wayne and Audie Murphy movies. But anyway, so I liked this movie. I thought it was very solid. There's a lot of hyperbole being thrown around about this movie.
I think the movie's pretty good. But I would agree with you in terms of that because, you know, I mean, the movie is, for me, I thought, you know, the X-Men films have been up and down.
Oh, yeah. Mostly
down. In terms of quality, yeah. But I think the fact that this movie is as solid as it is, I think for me, was very, very surprising. You know, James Mangold directed the last Wolverine solo picture, The Wolverine 2013. And it's a pretty solid film. I think almost anyone who watches it will agree that the final act is kind of a mess.
Yes.
And I think you also have the...
Mostly in contrast to the rest of the film, which is very solid.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the rest of the film...
That's the whole problem. Yeah. Is that they start off, like, really good, and it runs good for, like, an hour and 10 minutes, and then it gets wonky and comic booky, but, like, cartoonish.
Well, I mean, so, I think you also have, I guess, studio meddling in, you know, his vision, probably, of what they expect an X-Men film to deliver.
Yeah.
With this film, you do have like the action scenes and stuff, but with like his previous film, The Wolverine, they kind of feel that they had to make a comic booky kind of thing as opposed to just telling a good story with action scenes. So it's, I mean, the Wolverine itself is not without flaws, but overall, I think it's a pretty solid picture.
Yeah,
it's just this is like the next step, and you know, with him, it's a shame Wolverine is no longer going to be played by Logan. You know, if they continue with his character and any other things,
you mean Hugh Jackman, or you mean they will replace Logan with like X-23?
Who knows?
Okay,
yeah, both and neither, I guess.
Okay,
but James Mangold seems with this film to have kind of found the formula to kind of bring the X-Men back to a competing level with like the MCU films, if not financially, at least in terms of quality.
Well, I think, you know, we're jumping all around here, which is typically what we do anyway, so it doesn't matter. But like, you kind of are leading me to it. But the end of this film is a potential soft reboot to the franchise if they want to continue going forward in time, which I'm assuming they probably are not going to. They're probably going to go back for at least one more movie with the First Class cast.
At least with characters that some audiences will be familiar with. You need at least like one or two, I think.
Yeah, but I think they have, even though Lawrence and Fassbender, I think their contract is up. Mm-hmm. But McAvoy has another movie, I think. So they probably want to use him and the young Jean Grey and the young Scott Summers and maybe continue on from there. I know they're planning on doing a New Mutants movie. But not, it sounds like their inspiration's coming from, and I'm not a comic book guy, so you can shed light onto this, but from an older iteration of New Mutants, not where they are at the end of Logan with those characters.
We'll see. I mean, like the New Mutants from the comics, which I guess probably from like the 80s were mostly I know them from, these characters as New Mutants are probably just going to be more of a title. Because you know, the movie plays with the idea that there are no more mutants being born and haven't been born for decades.
Right.
Except for these, I guess, genetically, artificially created mutants.
Yeah.
So whereas everyone thought mutants were gone, these are technically new mutants. So that seems to me like the natural progression of where the studio wants the future of this franchise to go.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I really liked about this movie, let me back up before I start here. You mentioned James Mangold. James Mangold is a guy who has sort of like made a handful of really good movies. He really blasted onto the scene with Copland in 1997,
mm-hmm.
Which is a movie that surprised the shit out of everybody, especially with the character that Sylvester Stallone played and the performance that he gave. That sort of gave him a new age rebirth the way that John Travolta did in Pulp Fiction, or maybe not to the effect of Robert Downey Jr. in Iron Man, but certainly Stallone was not on anybody's short list to do anything at all. And when he did Copland, it was like, holy shit, we forgot Stallone could act.
Well, what were the other films that came out just before Copland? You had like Judge Dredd in 94.
Yeah.
And Assassins was 96, maybe?
Yeah, but it was, it was just wildly different. It was like Eddie Murphy doing Dreamgirls. You know, it was like, yeah, shit. You know, Eddie still got it. And then what happened?
Pluto Nash.
he went from Dreamgirls
Pluto Nash to
Imagine That and Dave and Meet Dave. Meet Dave. That's the one where he's like an alien in a human body.
Well, aliens
body.
Are like, yeah, aliens.
Miniature aliens?
Miniature aliens are inside him. God. Miniature Eddie Murphy is inside a robot Eddie Murphy.
Anyway, James Mangold. So he did Copland, and then, you know, he did Walk the Line, which was like a huge hit, an Oscar winner. You know, and then he did 310 to Yuma, which I'm going to be 100% honest. I've seen the original. I've never seen the remake with Christian Bale.
It's good.
Ben Foster.
I like it.
Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe.
So that's a movie that when I form my opinion about James Mangold, and what I'm about to say does not include that movie, but you know, he did Night and Day with Tom Cruise. He did The Wolverine. And then has he done a movie since that besides this one? besides Logan.
I mean, it's 4 years since, so.
So Mangold is a guy who, like...
I don't think he has, but...
Personally, I think the guy's got good instincts. I think he works pretty well with actors. I think his movies, in general, don't always flow well. A lot of times they have pacing issues. I thought Night and Day had the same issue. I don't like the way he shoots action. I thought the action scenes in Night and Day were not good. Although I thought the action scenes in The Wolverine were pretty good until the end. The last, Silver Samurai stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my big problem with this movie is that there's a lot of potential that I see in the story, and I don't necessarily see it realized on the screen. And a lot, you know, everybody's going crazy about this movie, and it's good, and I liked it, but I felt like the trailer that plays that Johnny Cash song
mm-hmm.
has more of a soulfulness to it than this movie does. And, like, to me, that's a disappointment.
Well, I think at the same time, when you look in the trailer, I think people tend to be a little bit more excited with what's not with what's unknown. So yeah. With the film laid bare, you know, of course, you know, you're judging it on everything as opposed to just, you know, the potential, which the trailer kind of like is infinite, gives you is infinite.
Sure. I would certainly agree with that. But I think in the context of the film, I felt like there are moments where they take their time and slow the film down, which should be a good thing. But I think in those moments, they don't capitalize on that at all dramatically. I don't think there's enough reflection outside of some dialogue that he has with Charles Xavier.
Sure, I can see that. Now, conversely, I do think there are some moments that occur in the film where stuff happens quick, but like I think it speaks volumes because of what just transpired.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, a good example, we talked about Eric LaSalle's character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's the scene where, you know, and, you know, I guess you can confirm with me if you felt the same way. But, like, you know, Professor Xavier and Logan, they end up helping a family who was run off the road by, I guess, motorized vehicles. Transport vehicles.
Yeah, self-driving 18-wheelers, basically.
Yeah, tractors and cases, but... so they end up going back with the family to have dinner and to stay the night. And, you know, first of all, I was thinking, Charles, what are you
right,
doing?
Right, which Logan's instinct is to say no immediately, but Charles is the one who, like, I got the sense, and I don't mean to cut you off, so I'll throw it back to you in a sec, but I get the sense that Charles is the one who feels like his time is the closest to being gone and that he needs to convince Wolverine that he should not be the loner that he has been his whole life, that he needs... someone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he needs family.
Okay, well, once they are together, something happens, which I guess evidently this family's being kind of bullied off of their land.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I guess kind of is pretty common material for Westerns.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, Wolverine helps them, and it's Eric LaSalle's character. I can't remember his first name, but something Munson.
Will Munson. Yeah.
You know, he discovers, you know, Wolverine is able to defend himself and is a mutant. Later on, X-24, which is a clone of Wolverine, comes
in. Does he know that he's a mutant?
I think so.
Well, because
they discuss it after, on the way back, while they're heading to the house.
Okay. I'm sure you're right.
Yeah.
You have a better memory than I do.
I'm pretty sure that. But, like, there's a... because there's a scene when X-24, which is a clone of Wolverine, also played by, like, it's like a younger-looking Hugh Jackman.
Mostly CG and yes, in some shows.
Destroy, like, I guess, kills everyone in his house, including his wife and son.
And the son, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
So, which I kind of knew was coming, but, you know, it's still pretty shocking because you're not... used to this kind of like action in an X-Men or Wolverine film.
Right. Well, this is, aside from that extended cut of the Wolverine, this is the first time that they've done an R-rated movie within that franchise, aside from Deadpool, which I would argue is not a part of the franchise.
Yeah, me too.
So,
So, you know, afterwards, Wolverine has a fight, and he's totally kind of, like, outmatched, I guess, this younger version of himself. Mm-hmm. And then Eric LaSalle's character, the farmer Munson or whatever, he drives 24 into, like, a bulldozer.
Right.
And its teeth. So he's stuck there, and he unloads a bunch of shotgun shells into him. You know, fully, so he kind of saves Logan from, I guess, being destroyed, you know, because his ability to heal has been
reduced. Yeah.
But then afterwards, he unloads these shotgun shells, and he pulls the shotgun on Logan. And to me, in that moment, I felt that, like, you know, Logan had helped him when he revealed himself to be kind of a mutant.
Yeah.
And in that moment, he made friends with Munson, but it's because he was able to, like, help him out. But at the point where he lost everything and, you know, he shoots an empty shotgun at Logan, it's kind of revealed that, to me anyway, that he was kind of like, that stuff didn't matter because he didn't see him as anything other than a mutant after.
Yeah. I think he was just, you know,
I mean, he dies immediately after.
His family's been killed and he was slashed by X-24.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we shouldn't have expected him to be dead, but they obviously allude to the fact that he may be dead when they go away from him originally, so that it's a surprise when he shows back up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, standard. And, I just, you know, I didn't take it as, I'm not sure I thought about it in the same way that you did. I kind of thought about it as if, like, he's just blinded by the rage, and the only one left to be held responsible is Logan. And so,
see, I mean, I think that's the way most people would have taken that.
Yeah.
The film itself, I know you don't really play video games, but the film itself, when the trailer first was revealed, people drew analogies to a game called The Last of Us.
Okay.
Now you've seen The Road, so you can kind of get an idea of what that movie is, what the feel of that game is.
Yeah.
Because in The Road, basically you can't trust anybody.
Right.
And, like, the world sucks. In the context of the game, I guess there's a couple parallels that exist in there between Logan and the main character in that game's name is Joel.
Okay.
Where, you know, sometimes you'll help people, but, you know, in the end, you're by yourself, like The Last of Us.
Yeah.
So I think in that moment, to me, that scene made me feel that, like, you know, it kind of, like, reinforced Logan's thing about wanting to be alone. Mm-hmm. Because immediately afterwards, you have the scenes with him and Laura, and, you know, he's very reticent to stay together.
Yeah.
Immediately after.
Yeah. That's an interesting observation, Cesar.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I feel like I probably could have articulated that better.
No, I think you did fine. Yeah. That's I like a lot of the little touches. You know, like sometimes his claw doesn't come out all the way.
That's to pull it out at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, yeah. That's a nice touch. And that he sort of limps the whole movie. Mm-hmm. Even at the beginning, before the altercation with the gang of people who are trying to jack his limousine. Or it's not really a limo, it's a car. Well I guess, like, it's a limo. It's like a
SUV,
a hybrid.
A lengthened SUV.
Yeah. But yeah, at one point he uses his body to shield the car because the car, like,
he said it was a lease.
Yeah.
Is the line.
Yeah. But, like, you know, that's to the point where this character is, you know, that's one of those subtle things that sets you up where he wouldn't give a shit about anything 20 years before, you know, but now he's got to cling on to that material possession because he has that goal in mind to buy the, what is it? A Sunseeker.
Yeah. Sunseeker, like a boat.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
for he and Charles to go get away from the world, you know, and if he doesn't have that car, he has no means to make money. And if he can't make money honestly, he could go steal money. But if he can't make money honestly, then, you know, he can never realize that dream and go live his last days peacefully.
Mm-hmm.
So I like them using Shane Mm-hmm. But I think the way in which they use it, I think they overuse it. I think it's ham-fisted.
They played two whole scenes in the
movie. it's really, and then she has the quote at the end, and I don't think that's necessary. I don't think it's necessary to see, you know, I mean, if you haven't seen Shane is one of the landmark westerns of the 1950s.
In the scene where she's watching it, you're talking about good moments. The moment where you see her kind of like enthralled by it, and you see the reflection of like the screen in her eyes. Yeah. I think that's a really good moment.
Yeah. I just, you know, like they do such a good job of trickling in the sort of subplot about the chemicals being in the water and the drinks and the food and everything that is the reason why mutants are not there anymore. The real reason that the powers have been degrading in them. They don't hit you over the head with that at all. Like they really do that for the most part, pretty subtle. And for them to use Shane in that way, I just think it's just overdone personally. You know, go watch Shane by all means. And there are parallels to what they're trying to do in Logan as to, you know, the type of thing that's going on in Shane. Although the ending is the opposite, you know, where.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Shane thinks that he can have a family essentially at the end, but then realizes he can't and leaves and goes to be on his own. But, you know, essentially the opposite feeling is left in Logan when he dies.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
he dies, everyone.
He's dead.
I think it's a pretty good closing shot as well, though. So I think a lot of people probably. The feeling that closing shot leaves for people, especially people who've been following this franchise for the better part of, you know, 1.5 decades, I think the emotional heft that the character under attachment to him, you know, I think is no small feat, and I think that probably has added to the hyperbole about the film.
This is this reminds me of like the talks that surrounded Rogue One when it came out. There are a lot of people who are like, Rogue One's the best movie of the franchise, or at least it's the best since Empire. And I think Rogue One, you know, without getting into this too heavily, Rogue One is a movie that sets a different tone than the rest of the series, takes a different approach from like a man on a mission type, you know, plot, whereas Logan takes more of a Western style plot from the X-Men franchise, drastically different in both cases. They're both sort of played as more serious adult themes, even though I would argue that Rogue One really isn't. And ultimately for me, the effect is the same. I think they're both solid movies, but I don't think either one of them are great. Logan is the culmination of an X-Men franchise that has disappointed people from the very beginning. And even though there are some movies that are very solid and they're like, I really like X-Men 2 a lot. I like First Class. I like Days of Future Past. I really don't care for the third one or Apocalypse at all. I think Apocalypse is maybe the worst one of the series, which we didn't, you know, talk about, you know, on a podcast. But I would argue that X-Men The Last Stand is more fun than Apocalypse, and that's why I think I like it.
You've said that before.
Yeah. Apocalypse is a piece of shit. And it wastes so much, you know, talent in Oscar Isaac and some of the other guys that I have in it. So, and at least X-Men 3 has, like, the Juggernaut.
played by who?
Vinny Jones, right? Yeah, Vinny Jones. I'm the Juggernaut, bitch!
It also has Ken Lung. Ken Lung.
It has some pretty terrible wire work, though, like with Kelsey Grammer's Beast and some other stuff.
Well, I think that's you know, honestly, that's a bit of a hallmark of the X-Men movies.
Yeah, that's true, ever since the first one, too. They just need to get rid of Bryan Singer on the franchise. Yeah.
Bryan Singer wasn't in the...
Singer's directed three of them, right? Mangold's directed two of them.
Oh, well, Bryan Singer directed 1, 2.
And Days of Future Past.
And Apocalypse.
Oh, yeah, right. 4. Yeah. So out of those 4, one of them is really good.
Okay.
And Days of Future Past is good too. All right, two of them are good. He's 2 for 4, which, you know, might get you in the Hall of Fame for baseball, but not as a movie director. So what else?
I don't know.
The look of the film's pretty good. It doesn't necessarily have there's a bit more of a realistic look to this film than the previous films have had in this franchise. The guy who lends to the film, John Matheson, did a bunch of movies with Ridley Scott. He did Kingdom of Heaven, Matchstick Men, Gladiator, Hannibal, Robin Hood. He also did X-Men First Class. He was a director of photography on that. And he did Man from U.N.C.L.E. with Guy Ritchie. So, I mean, you know, talented guy. Personally, I think the editing's a little bit choppy in the film. I'm not going to credit the editor because I didn't write it down. I mentioned earlier that I felt like a lot of the action scenes, like Night and Day, didn't really do it for me. I think there's a lot of iffy CGI in this movie too, in Logan. Some of the CGI doubles really stand out to me. There's a slow motion shot of Wolverine like going full berserker in the forest after he gets like the green chemical. And he's like diving like with both claws into some guy, and it's in slow motion. They could have easily used Hugh Jackman, but it's a complete like CGI double and it looks really bad.
I don't remember that.
Yeah. And there were a couple other moments where I thought the CG just wasn't that good. Although I thought the stunt work with the cars was good. And one of my favorite scenes is when they're trying to escape.
And he gets stuck in the fence?
Yeah. Yeah, the car chase around
the barbed wire.
The silo.
Their little compound.
Where they have Xavier hidden is a really good scene. Because that's a very extended scene. That's a long scene. That's when we first find out that she has claws. And do we see her foot claw in that scene?
Yes.
Yeah. So like that's got a lot of really cool stuff in it. Mm-hmm. Some of the later stuff, I didn't think it was that good. And I, you know, the R rating, I'm interested to hear what you think about this. I don't think it's necessary in this case, although like some of the kills are really cool. And I don't mind that it's rated R, but some of it seemed too over the top and too in your face. The scene where he is going up the elevator in the hotel when Charles's mind is going crazy and everybody
And he slowly kills everyone.
Yeah, and it basically in slow motion, he kills like, you know, a dozen people to get to Charles. And every time he kills it, it's like a headshot, but with Wolverine's claw coming out of either the back of some guy's head or through their eyeball once or twice is cool, but they, like you do it over and over and over again. To me, it just seemed like they were doing it to just flaunt the fact that they were making an R-rated movie.
Well, I think, I'm not sure if you're going to continue with your point.
No, go ahead.
Okay. One of the things about Wolverine is that, at least within like the comic canon is that he's super violent. And one of the things that's kind of been a continuing thread with his character in terms of the X-Men is how he kind of balances the fact that he tends to not have any compulsions against killing someone versus, you know, the kind of like more heroic nature of the team.
Right.
So that's something they've always juggled, and they've never ever touched that really in like the other films aside from, you know, probably an Apocalypse with his short Weapon X moment.
That's a good action scene.
He's a character who's, I guess for a lot of people, he's kind of known to be what among the more violent characters that exist. And honestly, like Deadpool is pretty violent, but like, you know, Wolverine himself has a larger kill count and a much more notable kill count than Deadpool. Yeah. And that's not only just because he's been around longer, but you know, he's he's kind of like the frontline type of guy.
Yeah. Deadpool seems to be more like a gleeful first-person video game guy.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, like, you know, regardless of whether he's using a gun or a sword, like, the violence isn't something... I think it's something that's entertaining to him, at least what I'm getting from the movie, because I don't read the comics. Like, you know, the violence entertains him in a way, whereas with Wolverine, there's more of a release from the violence.
Sure.
He's more, you know... primal than Deadpool is.
Yeah.
Very much so.
I think there's also... now, I rewatched The Wolverine pretty recently.
I noticed that. You posted something about
it. Yeah. There's a moment, you know, in that film, there's a couple of interludes where he is... Because it takes place after The Last Stand, X-Men 3, The Last Stand, in which he has to kill Jean Grey's character because she's gone kind of berserk and started killing everyone.
Right.
So she kind of comes back and almost torments him in like kind of like a dream state.
Yeah.
About like
I like that about that movie.
Yeah. In that film, now obviously you don't know where timeline wise where I guess which reality or whatever it might take place in terms of Logan, but like that film makes a number of points about how Wolverine doesn't want to fight anyone, but he's kind of forced back into it.
Yeah.
And like, you know, throughout the film, that's kind of like a major thread that runs through that picture.
Yeah. Well, at the beginning of that movie, he's like off by himself. Like, is he working as like a trapper or something like that?
No, he's kind of like living underneath rocks.
Oh, okay.
And then, cause he sees the, like a bear.
Yeah.
Like, initially, like early on in the picture.
Well, but then somebody kills the bear.
Yeah.
And then he goes and kills the guy, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. The bear is attacked with poisoned arrows,
which make him
crazy and attack humans. So basically, he finds the people who is responsible for it, and he kind of is planning to take revenge. But before he's able to kill them, Yukio's character, played by
I don't know, she's a cutie though.
It's gonna bother me. I'm not gonna look it up though.
Okay, fair enough. Do you want to continue with your point though?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess that was it. That like you know, it's the point where he's fighting against his desire to kill, but like in Logan, he's kind of like accepted. He doesn't necessarily resort to killing first because he just doesn't want trouble.
Yeah.
But he's like less, you know, but he's more likely, he's like kind of made peace with the fact that he's a killer.
Yeah. It's hard to establish like the state of the world in Logan. Is there a single moment where there's like a police car or a policeman, or any kind of law outside of the corporation that these guys are from?
Well, I guess you see firefighters and ambulances after the interlude in Las Vegas. But I don't know if there are...
But like,
if there's any law out there.
Yeah, but like that's what I mean. Like that's actually something that I'm now realizing that I like about it, is that that almost kind of makes it like the Wild Wild West. You know, like the only law is the law you make on your own. And so like when those guys are trying to steal the hubcaps off the, you know, the limo that he drives, you know, he tries to talk them out of it, tell them it's a bad idea, you know, and it's only when things get to the point where he just can't allow it to continue that he actually breaks out the claws.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he's that sort of reluctant gunfighter. So, but I think that's a cool moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Thanks.
Well, I guess, like, what else?
What about the kids? What about the other kids?
The other kids? To be honest, they don't... Aside from, I guess, Richter is...
Is he the oldest one, the leader?
He's the one that manipulates Stone.
Well, it's not the kid I'm thinking of, then.
Okay. Well, he's the...
Who's the kid at the end that picks up the truck and...
Well, he doesn't pick up the truck. Like, he lifts it by manipulating the earth underneath it, so it flips on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So earlier in the picture, I guess during...
That is the same kid then?
Yeah.
Okay.
So earlier in the picture, there's, I guess, whatever, the video of him kind of, like, pulling bricks out of the wall.
Right.
So he can control, like, the balls fall in his, I guess, like, whatever, his white... test subject gown, I guess. I can't remember what point I was going to make about him. What do I think about the kids? I think overall, aside from Daphne Keene, most of them are pretty pretty forgettable.
Yeah.
You can kind of get, they make it kind of like easy to guess who their genetic material is based off of.
Yeah.
Because you have Storm, and I guess you assume that the kid who can manipulate electricity is probably Storm.
There's one kid that that has, Bobby's Iceman sort of thing.
Yeah. I guess it was a girl who kind of makes the guy's arm explode for freezing. But, the kids themselves, they, in the video where they escape, they're using their powers and killing, scientists and like, security guards and stuff like that. But in the moments when they're running away, the finale takes place, up and down, a hillside in a forest.
Yeah.
They rarely use those abilities. And at the same time, earlier in the film, they plan to kill these kids. But, they end up just capturing them as opposed to just kind of being done and over with it.
Yeah.
They're
valuable assets, I guess. Yeah.
I guess. But, their orders are dead or alive. And, these kids are dangerous. Or they can be dangerous if they actually use their powers towards the end, which for some reason they're reticent to do until the very, very end.
Yeah.
I feel like with what they're able to do, a character like X-24 who kind of starts tormenting them maybe midway through the film.
Right.
With, I don't know if, I'm sure you heard it, but with the Terminator theme song kind of audio cues that exist when he shows up.
Like the den, 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 den.
Well, they make kind of it's almost someone's manipulating it's harsh strings, I guess, So maybe it's a little bit like that. And that Terminator theme crossed with some of the string work that they use for the Joker in the Dark Knight that Hans Zimmer uses.
Okay.
Yeah. Because they do it twice, which is the part at nighttime in the farm. And then at the end when he appears to, impale Wolfram, amongst other things.
Yeah. Well, it's solid, glad y'all enjoyed it. next year there'll be another movie that's the greatest comic book movie ever made, I guess. That's seems like every year something like that.
Oh, I think this year it's Guardians of the Galaxy probably.
Well, that one looks like a lot of fun, but I think this is the kind of movie, even though I don't think it's, as good as people are saying it is, it is the kind of movie that will probably help redefine the flexibility of the genre, the way that, The Dark Knight did with Batman,
And I think
sort of proving that you can maybe not take it out of the box, but widen the box a little bit.
I guess, obviously, the MCU from Disney is kind of like the model that studios want to copy. And for the last probably 5 years or so, DC and Fox have tried their best to kind of try to capitalize on what the MCU has built. DC, they're trying to catch up and do what Marvel has been doing, the MCU series of films have been doing. Albeit in a bit of a darker tone. I think Fox, with their history of kind of middling to terrible movies in recent years for a lot of their comic book franchises for Marvel, have stumbled onto the formula in a way to compete with Disney. And in that instance, it's got to be R-rated movies. Trying to do things the way Marvel has been doing it with their MCU series of pictures is not paying off for them in any way. Like, if you look at Fantastic Four and Days of Future Past might be, it might have made less than X-Men 2 in 2003, Which, that was a big success back then, but here we are.
You mean Apocalypse?
Yeah, Apocalypse.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Days of Future Past is a good one.
You're right. Yeah. And Days of Future Past was pretty successful too.
I haven't seen the road cut. You watched that, didn't you? How was it?
I think it's a little bit better when you have those kind of scenes though. The Wolverine, it looks like visual effects were completed, but for the road cut, you could tell there are some visual effects that were not fully completed for that cut. I think, or they don't look as good as the rest of the picture.
Okay, fair enough.
But if Fox wants to set themselves apart, you know, DC's trying to do it with like their more serious tone in many of their in their films, and it looks like that's going to continue going forward.
Yeah.
Wonder Woman might be a little bit lighter, even though it is war, but like at least you know you can see there are scenes in daytime that exist in the trailer at least.
Yeah. When there's a classic feel to it as well.
Sure, like so, not unlike Captain America, which you know, is people have been calling for, ever since the first preview was released.
Yeah.
Or I guess probably whenever like they first announced it was a period picture.
Yeah. But it's you harken back to what we considered to be. I don't think the reality was as innocent as we romanticize, but you know when we look back at the at pre-World War II America. Or even post-World War II America in, like, the Norman Rockwell 50s, you know, we tend to think of it as a simple time where everyone trusted everybody and we left our doors unlocked and, you know, everyone smiled and waved and said hi on the street and there was a much more neighborly, you know, connection between you know, people. I'm sure it's not exactly like that, though.
It definitely wasn't. Well, I mean, you also...
Otherwise, the genocide of, you know, however many hundreds of thousands of people wouldn't have happened.
Yes. but, you know, I guess, coming back to that, I think it's something that I've told other people, but, like, I kind of feel that, like, the first Captain America picture, the first Avenger, to me, because 2 and 3, like, tonally, I mean, you have the Russo brothers as opposed to Johnston directing.
Yeah.
Their tone is definitely more kind of almost like a grounded...
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, very much.
Yeah, like First Avenger to me, it kind of feels like you're watching a Captain America propaganda picture in like that tone, which is very, you know, it's full of adventure, full of heart, and it feels like, you know, an old school, like almost swashbuckling adventure.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's intentional.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, like, he, you know, he did The Rocketeer, which I know you're a big fan of as well.
Huge fan.
Very, very similar type thing. Mm-hmm. So.
So, I mean, I kind of see it as that. I wonder if that tone for period pictures is something that's going to continue because, I mean, honestly, there are a lot of period pictures that tend not to do well at all, though.
Yeah.
You look at something like Man from U.N.C.L.E. from a couple years ago, which I thought was very good, you know, kind of floundered heavily at the box office. It also got released against, like, a Pixar picture, whatever came out that summer. I remember. 2014, yeah.
Yeah, Man from U.N.C.L.E. I liked. I didn't love it.
I think it should have done much better than it did, though. At the box office, it probably made $200 or $300 million.
Yeah, it's very solid. I like Armie Hammer a lot. Henry Cavill's a bit stiff, but it works for the that type of secret agent.
Mm-hmm.
But Alicia Vikander, Hugh Grant, our friend Hugh Grant is in that movie.
Hugh Grant.
Yeah.
Jared Harris.
Yeah. Yeah, we love him.
He's okay. He just, you know, he was also in Pompeii, so don't forget that.
Didn't see it. Mm. You were the lucky one there.
Yeah, the lucky one. I've said this before, but don't watch Pompeii. When I was sitting in the theater, I was like cheering Mount Vesuvius. I was like,
you know what else I never saw? I didn't see Pompeii. I didn't see 10,000 BC. How was that one?
I didn't see it.
Oh, okay. We both skated by on that one.
It's like, you know, maybe that's one of the reasons I don't watch Game of Thrones because I can't. The guy who plays Jon Snow,
I don't watch Game of Thrones.
He's whatever the actor's name is.
Kit Harington.
Kit Harington. Yeah, he's the main. He's like. The lead role in Pompeii.
In Pompeii, right.
And he is horrible.
It's like a doomed lovers thing, right?
What? Yeah. I think...
Pearl Harbor.
As soon as I bought that ticket, I was the one that was doomed. But it's horrible, and I was like, oh, this kid's on a TV show where I can see him weekly? No, I don't think so.
Is it good bad, though?
No, it's bad. Yeah, Kiefer Sutherland.
You sure it's not Gods of Egypt bad?
I've never seen Gods of Egypt.
That one at least you can enjoy for Jeffrey Rush's Ra.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah.
Okay, Pompeii is basically like if you watched... like a Discovery Channel or History Channel documentary on the eruption of Mount Vesuvius and like those really bad dramatization interludes that they throw in.
Yeah.
Except with actors that you know. It's horrible.
Okay. It sounds, it sounds pretty bad. So, all right. So, let's,
you wanna sucks.
you want to wrap this up?
Yeah. I mean, I think Logan's, a good film. I think I like, based on our discussion just now, because we haven't really talked about it. We tend not to talk about films that we are planning to cover, I guess, before we are in front of a microphone. I think I liked it quite a bit more than you did.
Maybe not quite a bit more. I just, you know, like,
I'm probably not going to watch it a second time in the theater, but I think it's a movie I'd like to revisit later on down the line.
I was going to see it again last night, since you told me you wanted to talk about it today. But I just couldn't make the showtime work. I think it's solid. There were just a lot of little things that bothered me throughout the picture, but overall, like, I still enjoyed it. And I do think it's certainly the best standalone Wolverine movie. I think it edges out the Wolverine. You know, I would say that because it has a different feel, I don't even think it's apples and oranges with the other X-Men movies. But,
You know, it's not really based on the storyline, aside from, like, the look and tone of the film. But Old Man Logan is something that a lot of people kind of considered, or they thought that Logan would be based on that storyline.
Right.
Which it is not, because it uses characters that Disney uses, like most notably, like, the Hulk.
Yeah.
In it. So, I mean, it's similar to Old Man Logan in the way that Captain America Civil War is similar to, like, a comic book. Maybe tonally and the idea, one general idea, but there's no accuracy to that storyline, so right. It's not really beholden to it. But I feel like this film could be taken as that comic is to the rest of the universe, in that when it was released, is just almost, it's an alternate universe, you know, not anything that had real repercussions. Now, that's changed in recent years, but that's something that's like a very recent kind of like revelation to it. So I think you mentioned earlier that you could just kind of watch it on its own. And I think that's very true. You could just watch this as if, you know, the other movies don't really exist. There are a couple throwaway lines, but the movie does, hint at stuff, but doesn't feel the need to, explain certain events or history, right. Which I think is a strength of the picture.
Absolutely.
So you can kind of take it as that too. So like you said, anyone could kind of just jump in and this will be the picture that they see.
Yeah, if they had rolled up a text prologue before the movie began, like, you know, mutants are dying.
Yeah, spin some newspapers at the screen.
Well, but if they'd never established the character of Wolverine before this movie, you know, you could start it off the way, for example, Blade Runner begins with just the scroll of what a replicant is, and you know, this is the year, and we're going to throw you right into the world. I think the movie works on that level too. And as you said, that's definitely a strength. I like that about it. I think, you know, you mentioned that Fox could separate themselves from the MCU by doing more adult related R-rated, you know, comic book movies. I think that they could separate it from the MCU. I don't mind them doing R-rated movies. That's fine. But I think they could certainly just not throw continuity out the window, but just bring in filmmakers that have vision and take these characters for one installment at a time and just tell one self-contained story without worrying about it.
As a franchise.
Right.
That's not going to happen.
It may not, but I think that could be, you know, they can all be tangentially related, you know, like, I mean, Deadpool's obviously tangentially related to the X-Men because, you know,
Colossus. Negasonic.
Yeah. Well, she's not in the other movies though, but he is, just played by a different guy.
Yes. In every movie almost. Well, there's three of them that have played, that have used that role.
Really?
I think so.
I think the same kid from X-Men 2.
I think it's a different kid who plays him in Days of Future Past.
No, it's the same guy from X-Men 2 in Days of Future Past. Might be a different guy in any of the other movies.
It's definitely a different guy for Deadpool.
Well, the guy in Deadpool definitely looks more like Colossus from the comics, mm-hmm. or from the animated series, if you prefer, if you haven't seen or read the comics like me. So, But I just think that, like, Logan is the perfect template for them to continue in. Take like some of the best, you know, like Days of Future Past worked as part of the series, but they could have done a Days of Future Past movie as a standalone without rebooting First Class first, mm-hmm. I think. And just done that, you know. Like, I think DC should do the same thing. Take, you know, what they're doing with their animated movies and just do that with live action.
Sure.
So make a Kingdom Come movie. Make a,
I honestly think that, yeah. like, what the DC films need. I mean, we'll see now that Geoff Johns is on board as, like, a heavy influence on the Wonder Woman picture, the first film where he's had, like, full, you know, involvement in.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens with that going forward. But I've always felt that, like, the directors and the producers and the creators who work on animated pictures adapting, like, iconic stories, they're the ones who should be... you know, why not give one of those guys, you know, a chance to direct a feature film? I mean, you'll have some, you might have something like, you know, like Brad Bird or something yeah. taking over and putting like that vision, you know, just into flesh and blood.
Yeah. Well, we,
these guys have a real understanding about the characters and yeah. those storylines too. So,
well, we talked earlier and I don't remember if it was while we were recording or not about, you know, directors that, we had a conversation about directors who could have taken over the Batman after Ben Affleck left. And my immediate reaction was give it to the guys who did the animated series. You know, give it to, was it Bruce Timm and Paul Dini? Like, mm-hmm. like they'll make you a good Batman movie.
Like all these,
like, well, why is that so hard?
Like the best Batman, the best Batman movies are like the animated ones.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, and like, somebody at Warner Brothers might say, well, if we take them out of the animated, you know, who's gonna do that?
Man, there's a whole, like,
they're too valuable because the animated movies are such a success for them. But what's gonna make more money? They're not gonna make $1 billion from 10 animated movies. You know, but they could make $1 billion with one live action movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, so, like, where's your priority?
Get this shit on track.
Right. Come on, Warner Brothers. Just kidding, we love you.
If you guys want to
get us some screenings.
Yeah, yeah. If you guys, you know, want to sponsor us, that's cool.
Hey, we'll come in and tell you what you're doing wrong. We're good at that.
Yeah. Just make sure you guys click subscribe.
Oh, man. All right, let's wrap this up.
Okay.
All right. So we liked Logan. It's good. If you think it's the best comic book movie ever, good for you. I'm glad you liked it that much. If you don't, that's fine too. I hope you enjoyed it though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, we have a
generally how I feel about every movie though.
We have a full year of, you know, I guess some big budgets comic book based films coming out or comic book like films coming out.
Is it six movies this year?
I don't know.
Well, you've got Logan, Guardians, Wonder Woman, Spider-Man, Thor, and Justice League.
I feel like there's probably going to be one or two more that are based on comics that people don't have on their radar, though.
Well, those are the big ones.
Yeah.
So we've got a lot to look forward to this year.
Hmm. And of course, you know, I watch Japanese films, and like the big budget movies are all based on like manga. A lot.
Oh, did you see The Great Wall?
Not yet.
Mm, all right, I'm going to hold my opinion then.
Yeah. Did you watch it?
I did.
Hmm. I like that. I like Andy Lau, and I like Jing Tian, but. I guess I haven't seen her in a movie in a little bit, but I guess she's in King Kong next week. So,
is she? Yeah. This week
she's the Asian one.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there's.
I think in Great Wall in the trailer she's featured heavily, so I guess she's probably like a general. She looks like she leads like a group of like women based on the preview, like a regiment of women. Does that sound
that
like a character?
That is accurate at the beginning of the movie. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. She's basically like the second in command to the guy who actually runs the protection for the Great Wall.
Is that Andy Lau's character? No. He's the guy that was in House of Flying Daggers.
No. No. Andy Lau, he's
got a peacock in his helmet, so he's got to be important. Peacock feather in his helmet.
I don't remember if they establish like exactly what he is, but he's like a key advisor. He's not the king, because obviously the wall protects the kingdom. So there's a capital, which they have a battle at later. But the general who's in charge of the army that protects the Great Wall, Andy Lau, is one of the, you know, one of the key strategists.
When you say king, you mean like the emperor?
Yeah. Well. Yes.
do you recall what his name is?
Nah. No.
Is that Zhuge Liang?
I have no idea.
Probably not. Okay.
You could look it up on IMDb.
Yeah, I haven't watched it yet, though. Oh. So I'll check. I don't want so. So you know, I just as part of that, I haven't even watched that Alien Covenant like preview or whatever because I want to watch the movie.
Yeah. I'm excited for that, though. Like, you know.
See, people, I didn't watch the new trailer either. So, like, people are like, the trailer looks like it spoils the stuff. So I was like, man, if I'm in the theater and it starts up, I'm covering my eyes and ears.
Well, it looks like Ridley Scott took the criticisms that were levied at the feet of Prometheus, to heart. And it has made this a more horror-driven, tense picture. Definitely R-rated.
Well, I think what a lot of people don't realize is that with Prometheus, you know, overall, I like the picture.
Yeah, me too.
But I think the expectation of an alien movie, you know, in this day and age, everything gets spoiled and how stuff is connected. Now, people tend to look to that preview for Prometheus, and you know, there's no way the movie was ever going to live up to what the preview promised almost, visually promised.
I'm actually sorry that they tried to tie it directly into the Alien franchise. I would have been happy with them just having a big concept science fiction movie about man trying to meet their creator. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, obviously we know it's part of the Alien franchise because you have the space jockey at the beginning of the first Alien. Mm-hmm. But they didn't have to necessarily connect those dots in the last act of that movie, like right away. Mm-hmm. So.
I think I'm just trying to take a look here. Yeah. At the same time, you got something that a lot of people don't consider is that Ridley Scott, you know, he ran Scott Free Productions with Tony Scott, and right. Tony Scott died in the middle. He killed himself in the middle of production. So you got to wonder how much that influenced the output of that film, Prometheus. So, I mean, that's not something you can ever really put into, I guess, like, you know, exact numbers or anything. But I'm sure it was, you know, it wasn't like an inconsiderable amount considering, you know, a big budget movie like that. And, you know, Fox wanting to adhere to, like, a planned release date.
Sure. Ridley Scott had another brother who died at a certain point in his career. You know, if you consider Alien his greatest movie, which a lot of people do, certainly his second greatest movie came, and maybe his darkest film came out of, you know, that, and that was Blade Runner. Mm. So, you know, maybe Ridley's due, you know, at this point. He's made a lot of solid movies, but hasn't really had a great movie since maybe Gladiator. The Kingdom of Heaven director's cut is good.
Yeah, the Roadhouse, the Roadshow edition.
Yeah,
that's pretty good.
But like, I didn't like Robin Hood at all. But I like Kingdom of Heaven.
I haven't seen Robin Hood.
There's an extended cut of Robin Hood on the two disc DVD, or I assume the Blu-ray as well. But I didn't buy it, so I don't know if it makes the movie any better. But stuff like A Good Year.
I think that movie's okay.
And, yeah, but it's not...
I'd watch, you know, Marion Cotillard's stomach.
Yeah. Or any other part of her. But yeah, like, you know, American Gangster. It's good. It's not great, though. Yeah. But, was it Body of Lies?
Yeah, I haven't seen
it. That's the one with DiCaprio and Russell Crowe. He made how many movies did he make with Russell Crowe? Is it four? Gladiator, Robin Hood, Body of Lies, and A Good Year?
I feel like there's got to be like one or two more, though.
I think it's just those. Because then, you know, Russell Crowe got big. and then played Jor-El. And then he did Nice Guys, which was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We need more of that.
Nice Cold You.
We need a Nice Guys sequel. Please.
the not so nice guys.
Nice guys too.
Too
even
nice,
nicer.
Too nice, two guys. Okay.
All right.
Okay, I'm just gonna say something now.
Oh, geez.
Okay, I guess this is a joke.
Is it? Okay.
About about Logan. So obviously they're gonna be the new mutants at the end of the picture with like the kids kind of running off into Canada,
right,
or whatever. But like, I guess, you know, there's no talk about really about like, I guess like the women who carried them, but you assume that because it was in Mexico that they're all probably, they mentioned that they're young girls, but they're all probably Mexican young women. So maybe they will be called the Mex-Men. Oh, thank you.
You looked at me like I was fake laughing. That was a genuine laugh, though. I, to be honest, I wasn't prepared for it to be that bad. So you really got me on that one.
Okay. Okay, I think
I should have seen that coming, actually. But I guess, you know, I've been eating too much corn syrup or something. Like my mutant powers of catching puns before they happen is gone.
maybe just, you know, you kind of turn your mind off a little bit when it comes to superhero films.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
what's Bruce's, I just turn my mind off all the time.
What's anyway. Bruce's mother's name?
Why did you say that name?
You're like, yeah, why?
Wait, I know. Seriously, you have to admit, like 75% of the public, myself included, had never put that together before. I don't think of like what Thomas and Martha Wayne is something that if you were like, what are Batman's
what's Spider-Man's uncle's name?
It's Ben. Because it's Uncle Ben.
Yeah.
Right. And Aunt May. So that's in the name of the character. But, like, the Kents are often just referred to as the Kents or Ma Kent and Pa Kent. So, like, I, being from a certain generation, think of Pa Kent as Jonathan because of the scenes in Donner's Superman movie, original Superman film. You know, especially with, you know, Martha Kent calling to him when he has his heart attack. But so that, like, that sticks with me, but who, like, he calls her Martha in that movie, but it's like, for some reason, it just doesn't stick as well. So like,
Zack Snyder did his job.
So I, like 75% of the rest of the public were like, huh, Martha and Martha. That is funny.
Hmm.
You know,
form a team.
Batman's reaction is still crazy. but still, like, you know, it was a stepbrothers moment. Did we just become best friends?
Yes. Batman put his balls in Superman's drum set.
Ooh, polite euphemism. Mm. Anyway.
Literal.
All right. So, hey, this was...
probably way longer
than this. This was an extremely tight 20-minute conversation about Logan's that preceded this. But hey, you know, we're it's been a while. We're a little rusty.
Yeah. Plus, we haven't had a chance to really talk to each other, so, you know.
That's true. That's right.
King Kong this week, though.
You haven't been accessible for much of it, so.
It's been a pretty stressful couple of weeks.
Yeah, I know. So I'm not, you know.
Thanks for bringing it up.
I didn't. I just said you were unavailable, that's all.
King Kong is this week, so
it's been
planning to watch that.
It's been a pretty weird you know,
half a year.
Five months, you know. So
yeah, well, King Kong is this week, right? And
yes.
I think next
Skull Island is this week.
Yeah, I think the there's gonna be a revival for Reservoir Dogs next week, so maybe I'll try to watch that. I wouldn't mind talking about Reservoir Dogs if you want. It's been a while since I've
seen it. Just skipping Maltese Falcon?
What's that?
I lent you my DVD and everything.
Yeah, well, I thought you gave it to me because you bought it on Blu-ray.
Well, you're welcome to keep it, but I gave you my DVD. Like, I think you should watch it.
Okay. You can keep that Jenga. I'm just going to buy the Blu-ray when it comes out.
I gave that back to you, didn't I?
I think so.
I'm pretty sure it's not in my collection anymore.
Because I'm pretty sure I did not give you Silver Streak back. I don't think I have Jenga.
I'll check for it.
Whatever.
I'll check for it.
You can have it.
Okay, fine. I'll check for it, though. And I will watch it if I have time.
It's not necessary. I'm probably not going to discuss it because I, you know.
Yeah, you can just keep Silver Streak because I'll buy the Blu-ray then. give me an excuse to buy the Blu-ray for that amazing movie you still haven't.
You can keep you can keep it and then watch it, and then we can't talk about it because I don't have a copy to watch. So I kind of want to do another. I've been watching like Japanese pictures, so I kind of want to talk about another one of those, but.
Yeah.
There are a lot of them, aside from, like, I have Blu-rays of them, but a lot of them aren't really available in any other, like, easy medium. Mm. Plus, I guess it's going to be...
Well, it's got to be Region 1 for me, because I'm not a tech guy, and I don't have...
Well, I mean, for Blu-rays, like, Japan and Hong Kong and Korea are the same region as the United States.
If it's a Criterion, I have Filmstruck, so...
Well, Filmstruck does offer other stuff.
Yeah.
Don't they? Do you have any contemporary stuff?
It's all stuff that's on TCM or Criterion. To be honest, and I'm not interested in bad-mouthing Filmstruck, but I'm not sure I like their search function that well. And I don't think...
They still haven't made an app for my Roku, so I haven't subscribed to them yet.
Yeah.
But that's
to
fine.
Be honest, I've been a subscriber since, I don't know, whenever they launched...
December, right?
No, before that, right?
Well, I know, like, well, like, they didn't get the Criterion, well...
October,
Hulu
I think.
Hulu lost
September, October.
Hulu lost the Criterion collection in November. So...
Yeah, so it was probably October.
They might have been around a little bit before that, yeah.
But I've literally maybe watched only a half dozen movies through Filmstruck since then. Like, you know, so I'm averaging maybe once a month. So
yeah, I think I got my tax return back, and I bought 11 Japanese movies, mostly Blu-ray, some on DVD.
Yeah,
mostly like 80s and gangster stuff, some new, some recent stuff, but I haven't touched any of it. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I ordered a Korean box set of Shinji Iwai films, Japanese director who is one of my favorite Japanese directors working currently.
Cool.
Man.
Would he have done anything that has been released here that I would know?
He did a segment on New York, I Love You.
Okay.
He did, I don't know if you've ever seen that picture.
I haven't, but I'm familiar with it.
He did the segment with Orlando Bloom and Christina Ricci.
Okay.
Man, I just love his work. You might know there's a bit of, his movies tend to be about youth and music obsession. He kind of is like a music video director. Originally, and Kill Bill Volume 1 actually uses a bit of music from one of his films.
Okay.
It's the scene in which the bride sees the blade that Hattori Hanzo was made for the first time.
Okay.
There's like a bit of a vocal track that's from a movie that he did about a boy who's obsessed with a singer. That song is one of the songs that the singer sings in the film.
Okay.
So
leave it to Tarantino to pay homage in that fashion.
It's an excellent movie. I bought a Blu-ray set. It's got Love Letter, which is amazing, which is kind of like his first feature film, but goddamn, it's so good.
Cool.
Hannah and Alice, which was released by HVE and Janus, but is not a Criterion release in the United States, which I think is just a matter of time, though. Another movie called April Story. Which I haven't watched in a long time because I went to watch it on DVD a couple of years ago. I opened up the case and there's no DVD in there. So,
oh,
so I was like, what the
that
fuck?
Sucks.
What the fuck? It's like, who's stealing? who's stealing my Japanese?
Mailman's got an L region player somewhere.
Yes. At least they got a taste. But, you know, it doesn't matter. I got these Blu-rays, and they're amazing, amazing looking.
Okay. Well, let's, you know, are you going to have time to watch a couple of movies?
Yeah, probably not multiple.
You know, you know, I'm moving to California at some point, right? So, no. Like, we don't have a lot of time to.
Well, we're gonna have to work out something. Skype.
No, we'll Skype. Yeah,
Skype or Hangouts or whatever.
That's a given. But like between now and then, we could bank a few and actually spend some time together.
Okay.
You know.
I guess we'll take a look at the schedule. I have a little bit of time tomorrow night, but I don't know if I'll watch something that we both can watch before then. I probably don't have time. Yeah, I don't know. We'll discuss it. This is not an on-air discussion.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap this up. Thank you guys for listening. Very, very loose. Thanks for hanging in there as we kind of stumble through a bunch of stuff.
Stumble, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I was just thinking of, like, they've been putting out montages of Logan, of his role throughout, like, these 17 years I've been portraying the character.
The hair from X-Men 2 at the beginning that doesn't match the hair of the rest of
X-Men
2.
When he's walking at Alkali Lake.
Yeah. Like, that is, like, the craziest hairdo ever. I love that.
I was just thinking that, like, someone should do a montage of all of those scenes of him, you know, brooding and walking and fighting or whatever, but set it to, like, Dewey Cox's Beautiful Ride.
Yeah. That would be awesome. You should do that.
I don't have good editing skills.
Now I want to go home and watch Walk Hard. Mm. That's the second time today that's come up. Talking about Tim Meadows.
Smell that horse shit. You smell that horse shit, Dewey. What I need is for you to open up your minds and learn to play the fucking theremin.
All right, guys. Where can we find you on Twitter, Mr. Cesar?
I am at Junior Beho. On Twitter, as well as filmsmash.com.
Filmsmash.com.
Yep.
Asian news and reviews. Mm-hmm. Great site. Highly recommended. Lots of good stuff there.
Yeah. We have contests and such.
Yeah.
We just finished one for Cold War II. The first one, which is quite good.
You got to keep spreading those around on the celluloid jelly forum.
Yeah. Okay.
So.
I keep on forgetting. I guess we just ended the
Cesar
contest.
Cesar forgets about you. Did you hear that? He forgets about you.
Don't be jelly, guys.
All right. And Instagram, Volton, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think. Yes.
Something like that. There's a Volton in there. Is that the whole thing?
It probably is.
Okay. And then I'm at Setting the Frame on Twitter. And no other current digital footprint aside from the celluloid jelly forum. So...
The Facebook group.
Yeah, so follow me on Twitter if you like. I don't tweet that much, though. Not as much as I used to.
Me neither.
To be honest, I'm not on social media as much as I used to be. Just don't spend that much time.
Life is busy.
Life has been really fucking busy, dude. Like, I can't even tell you. Like, well, you know. You've been busy, too. But, like, you know.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll end it there. All right, guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks for sticking around.
Yeah, yeah.
If you made it to this end, the password is Snapple.
I'm the juggernaut, bitch!